I'm Sarah Borkson-Keita with the REIT Report. Do you want to learn more about REIT investment opportunities? Then join us at REIT Week, the premier conference for institutional investors to learn about REIT's business plans, future predictions, strategies, and more. Over 3,000 industry professionals will attend, including management teams from more than 120 REITs representing every sector, from data centers to retail and everything in between. REIT Week is taking place in New York City June 7th and 8th, and registration is now open. Just go to REIT.com/REITWeek2023 to register. That's REIT.com/REITWeek2023. Now let's get to our guest.
We feel that there's still, at the end of the day, in this inflationary environment, in this volatile market, it's the residential REITs that's the safe sector to be in. Because again, we're focused on that rental income. The tenant that pays that rent goes into investors' pockets as the form of dividends.
Hello and welcome to the REIT Report. I'm your host, Sarah Borkson-Keita. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by David Auerbach, Managing Director at Armada ETF Advisors. David is a veteran institutional trader with a particular focus on REITs, and he shares some of his extensive REIT knowledge and insights in his daily REIT Beat newsletter. David, welcome to the podcast.
Sarah, thank you so much for having me again. I really appreciate it.
So, David, let's start by talking about Armada ETF. How did it get started? How does it operate? And what are the different residential sectors that you're investing in today?
Sure. Love the question because it's a great way to start. Armada, we just celebrated our one-year anniversary on March 1st of being a publicly traded entity. Our flagship product, the Residential REIT Income ETF, the ticker is HAUS, H-A-U-S, is comprised of 25 pure-play residential REITs. The formation started from our founder, who is an owner-operator of apartments up and down the East Coast and into the Sun Belt. And when we started talking, he said to me, David, I work with these apartment REITs. I know these companies very well. I know what their properties are worth. They know what my properties and units are worth. We know what the guys down the street's units are worth. And this was happening during COVID when we were discussing. He's like, there is no better investment opportunity in the public markets right now than the residential REIT space. And with him having this belief, he went to his advisor during the pandemic, who happened to be his college roommate. They went to a very prestigious English university, and they sat down, they started talking, and my partner said that he wanted to liquidate his entire portfolio and buy a pure play residential REIT ETF. And after doing some research at the time, the advisor came back and said, that product doesn't exist. And in the field of dreams analogy, my partner has a belief of if you build it, they will come, and sought out to develop the first pure play residential REIT ETF. We are comprised of multifamily, which is coastal and sunbelt apartments, single family rentals, manufactured housing, and senior housing properties or senior housing REITs.
There's obviously no shortage of volatility in the market today with issues in the banking sector, just the latest ingredient in that mix. How were residential REITs positioned coming into this environment, and how do you see them faring?
It's definitely been a volatile environment. We can't escape the news or the headlines that we see on a day-to-day basis, especially with all the chatter about rising interest rates, Federal Reserve interest rate policy, hard landing, soft landing, hawkish, you know, all the terms we see every single day. We take a very high-level view of how important residential real estate or residential REITs are to the day-to-day life of our investors and the residential REIT tenants. From a very high level from where we sit, most of our residential REIT constituents don't have exposure to the headline banks that we've been seeing about. Now, with the big overseas merger that was recently, we still see more to play out as far as how the banking deals will work with that big international entity. That being said, we're focused on the tenant. We're focused on that rental income. And so the end tenant, whose deposits are insured by the FDIC and the federal government, doesn't have to worry about paying the rent because the money is there. As far as the environment, we use COVID as the perfect example because all of the REITs, most if not all of the REITs, took advantage of unprecedented market conditions when the 10-year treasury was trading around 1.5%, if not lower, and were able to lock in, for some guys, 30-plus year debt at very attractive rates, especially where we look at in today's interest rate environment. So from a high level, many of these REITs are very, very well capitalized with very strong balance sheets to handle the current interest rate environment.
And how would you say leasing and rent growth trends are looking at this point? And are you seeing any variation between those different geographic markets that you're focusing on?
So the answer is yes, there's definitely some geographic disparity. We are still seeing in many of the Sunbelt markets, we are starting to see a return to some of the coastal markets. If you recall during COVID, there was this mass migration out of New York, San Francisco, LA, and some of these other markets. And now we are seeing folks return to the New Yorks and the San Franciscos or some of these markets that had lost so many tenants. From a high level, looking at fourth quarter earnings, first quarter look through, comments going into the recent Citi REIT conference, many of these apartment REITs have talked about, frankly, some of the tailwinds in leasing that they've been experiencing. Many of these companies were guiding to high single-digit rental growth for this year. For some of these companies, you might see, if all goes well and things remain, you know, all else remains equal, I wouldn't be shocked if we do see, for some of these guys, small double-digit increases in some of these markets. And I think from a very high level, when you look at the general economic situation right now, we still know that the housing markets remain upside down. Mortgages are approaching 7%. Mortgage rates are approaching 7%. Interest rates continue to rise. The affordable home, and you know, everybody has a different definition of what's affordable, but I'll refer to it as the starter home. That product isn't available anymore, especially in some of these very sought after desirable markets. As a result, it's these multifamily or these residential REITs that benefit from that demand for housing product. If you're in the Sun Belt and you get relocated to Austin, Texas, and yet there's not enough housing inventory available in a 7% mortgage environment, chances are you're going to go rent a house, which benefits the single family rental REIT players, or you're going to go rent an apartment. And again, that benefits many of the apartment REITs that are out there. But from a very high level, from the commentary that we're seeing from these companies, they have started out first quarter on a pretty high note. Now, in my opinion, again, I just want to stress this is my opinion, I think because of the uncertainty that we're seeing out there with the economic environment, I think a lot of the companies were being very cautious on their guidance for this year. And so as we start to see the rest of 23 play out going into 24, you know, if things continue to go on the track that they're going, I wouldn't be surprised if we see some of the companies raise guidance based off of some of these tailwinds that they are experiencing.
You've already touched on the single family rental sector. Do you see that filling an important niche in the market?
No question about it. Especially when you look at the number of players that are clamoring to get involved in the space. Remember, we only have a couple of publicly traded companies, but the single family rental space is really dominated by private players. And so we're seeing sovereign wealth funds, private equity, big wirehouse firms, some of the home builder guys partnering. You know, we're seeing a lot of different angles coming into the space. Look at demographic trends. As we notice populations, you know, migration trends and the age demographics of the population, you know, the younger generation, Gen Z, further beyond our kids, our grandkids may not be able to afford that house. Maybe, you know, some people have said that they'd rather rent than own. They don't have to deal with all of the headaches of home ownership. And so, you know, there could be a long avenue for growth. I mentioned this story because I'll never forget when I bought my first house back in 2006. I was a trader at Green Street. I'll never forget my boss at the time. She sits me down. She's like, David, I want to tell you something. Home ownership is so overrated. And I got defensive. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm achieving the American dream. I finally own my own piece of property. I'm so excited. She's like, congratulations. And now you have to deal with property taxes and maintenance and foundation issues and upkeep versus just paying somebody to handle all that stuff for you. And I think that's some of the wisdom, you know, that she was trying to impart on me that I think some of the, you know, alternative tenants are thinking about as far as that rent versus own when it comes to a home.
So you really see this sort of shifting mindset in terms of rental versus home ownership.
I'll be honest, until we see the home builders come out and deliver a truly affordable product. And again, affordable varies on where you live across the country. But, you know, from a very high level, we bought our first starter home in 2006 and it was around $150,000. And that same home today is worth $450,000. So it shows you, granted, even though we're talking, you know, 18 years ago, 17 years ago, a $300,000 difference. You know, a starter home today should not be $500,000 in rural America, let's say. I mean, again, I'm just using it as a broad example. But until Lennar Toll Brothers Pick Your Favorite Home Builder offers what I call light, Lennar light, Toll Brothers light, something that's, again, a more affordable developed product, I think that it's going to benefit the single family rental guys for a long period to come.
And staying on that affordability theme, what about manufactured housing? What role are they playing?
It's such a different sector today than it was 20 years ago. Manufactured housing has always had, I don't know what we want to call it, a negative stigma based off of what the people think the property types look like or what some of the tenants are. And now as you look at how the properties have evolved over time, some of these communities are really in some of these prime locations, retirement communities, you know, very close to the beach. And I do see that we're all getting older. We're, you know, 20 minutes older, 15 minutes older now doing this than when we started. And so I think that there is going to be that demand. I like to say that the product, especially when it comes to manufactured housing, senior housing, apartments in general, the product that you see today is going to look nothing like the product that you're going to see 20 years from today. And so watching how these sectors continue to evolve, what the manufactured housing property is going to look like 20 years from today versus what it looks today. Same thing with like senior housing communities, another great example. That property that exists today is going to look nothing like what it's going to look like 20 years from now when the next generation of tenants are moving in.
So David, where do you see the biggest opportunities and challenges in the residential sector in the short term?
Obviously, I think the biggest challenge right now is the state of mortgage rates and interest rates. I think that's impacting as far as the tenant being able to go out and buy that home. I keep hammering on this example because you have this great 275 mortgage here in Dallas, and I get a great opportunity to go and move to Denver, but I'm taking down a 675 mortgage. I mean, think about how many additional thousands of dollars that's costing my mortgage every single month. I think that's one of the biggest overhangs. I think if we see massive layoffs, if we go into the recession that they're talking about here, but I want to caution in the world of, you know, 3.5% approximate unemployment, we still have very strong employment levels that are out there. And at the end of the day, that rent check, that mortgage check, that is the most important bill that you spend every single month. That's bill number one before anything else that you focus on. You know, gas prices are up. Great. The landlord's knocking on your door in the first of the month. Where's my rent? You will do whatever it takes to make sure that there is a roof over your head and your family's head and your grandchildren's head. And so we feel that there's still, at the end of the day, inflationary environment in this volatile market. It's the residential REITs that's the safe sector to be in because, again, we're focused on that rental income. The tenant that pays that rent goes into investors' pockets as the form of dividends.
Great. Now, David, I know that you watch a lot of other sectors besides residential. What else is likely to be on your radar in the coming months?
You know, we're definitely looking at office, what's happening with office right now. I still think that, you know, with work from home having a massive impact on the sector, it'll be interesting to see, does office ever recover to the way that it used to be? We're obviously watching a lot of the sector darlings like industrial, data centers, towers, those sectors that we're using every single day. But then we also see news about self-storage and how that's not going away. You know, there's a potential merger on the table with a couple of the players that's in the industry. And I think another story to keep an eye on is what's happening in the private REITs. You know, we're seeing stories from some of the biggest entities that are out there that have, you know, attractive portfolios, but yet investors are having a hard time moving their assets from private to public based off of valuation for what some of the public guys are trading. And I think it's definitely something to keep an eye on as we move into 23, when potentially cap rates and property values are reset.
David, thank you so much for your time today.
Sarah, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode of the REIT Report, please subscribe or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.